Chapter 6, Concluding Thoughts, Playful Learning for All. In your efforts to promote playful learning, you are joining a long tradition, one that is gaining momentum around the world. Over 2,000 years ago, the Greek philosopher Plato recognized that play supported children's learning and felt that playful conversations could further adult understandings. 1,000 years later, the Persian scholar Al-Ghazali advocated for education that included playful activities such as puppet theaters, sports, and toy animals. He maintained that the prevention of the child from playing deadens his heart, blunts his sharpness of wit, and burdens his life. Several hundred years after that, during the Ming Dynasty in China, Wang Yangming regarded playfulness as children's natural temperament and maintained that education should be shaped accordingly. In the last 150 years, with advances in learning theory, there have been growing understanding that play has an important role in education. In Japan, Sozo Kurosaki proposed that teaching should be driven by children's interests and curricular themes based on observations of children's play. In Italy, Marie Montessori wrote that play is the work of children and devised an educational system accordingly. In the then Soviet Union, Lev Vygotsky highlighted the importance of play in children's development and argued for meaningful, play-based educational experiences. Similarly, in the U.S., John Dewey's discussions of active, meaningful school experiences align with our conception of playful learning. Since 2010, there has been an increasing focus on playful learning, with ministries of education in South Africa, Ukraine, and Scotland, among others, incorporating play into national policies. By the time the COVID-19 pandemic struck, playful learning had helped Colombian educators Karen, Mauricio, and Catalina from Playful Learning Online adapt their instruction for distance learning. During a period of great uncertainty, they used playful practices to continue to help their students lead their learning, explore the unknown, and find joy in learning. We hope that this book supports your participation in this growing movement, helping you and your colleagues build classrooms and school cultures that support playful learning. This is because we believe all learners have the right to engage in playful learning. Playful learning benefits all learners. It can help them master skills, experiment, innovate, and navigate uncertainty. Playful learning is where all learners can ask, what if? The world needs people, lots of people, to be asking what if. This seems particularly true for children facing difficult and harsh circumstances, displacement because of war, separation from immediate family members, hunger, and more. Even in these circumstances, children play. In a world filled with uncertainty, children need an education that helps them learn to adapt, be creative and resilient, and work collaboratively with members of their communities to identify and solve problems, having the benefits of being able to ask what if. This is one of the reasons why the UN Charter on the Rights of the Child include the right to play, not for some children, for all children. In our final chapter, we address two topics that can help bring playful learning to more children. First, we name some challenges you may face in creating cultures of playful learning and suggest some what-if possibilities to address these challenges. We then explain more than one way, an idea that can support your efforts to adapt playful learning to the circumstances of your classroom and school. Challenges to playful learning and some what-ifs to face them. As you embark on efforts to bring more play and playfulness into your classroom and school, you will undoubtedly face challenges. In this section, we name some of these challenges and offer some what-ifs, thoughts about how you might address them. Of course, you are the best judge of how to address challenges in your community, such as where to start, how to support change, how to respond to concerned families and colleagues, what to do about limited resources, how to address contrary policies. Where to start? We have offered multiple ways for you to foster a culture of playful learning: 5 classroom practices with 15 associated strategies, 5 school-wide practices with multiple dimensions, and 18 related tools. You might be wondering where to start. Rob Huben of the Agora Schools, a network in the Netherlands where playful learning thrives, believes educators often overthink change and innovation in their practice. His advice of where to start is to make a plan and do it. saving reflection for after you try something. We agree. What if you started by starting? Pick one strategy and try it. Document your experiment. Use the documentation to reflect on what went well and what you would do differently. Try it again. And what if, after trying a few things, you made a plan based on what was working and the most pressing needs of your students? The plan might focus on one aspect of playful learning, for example, helping learners explore the unknown. It might focus on one classroom or school-wide practice. We suggest giving your time plan, a year or even more. Getting good at playful classroom and school-wide practices takes practice. How to support change? You have identified a strategy to try. You have a plan. Perhaps inspired by one of the pictures of practice, it entails an in-depth whole group conversation, or students interacting in small groups without your supervision, or a new school-wide ritual. You think the plan will make learning in your classroom and school more fun and interesting. You give it a try, and it fails. Schools are famously resistant to change. Relationships and approaches to learning tend to be firmly established and perpetuated. For example, teachers often teach the way they were taught. Breaking patterns to make significant and lasting change is a challenge. Changing culture is hard. For example, learners enter your classroom with a sense of their student self, how to behave in school, how they learn, and how they relate to their teachers and fellow students. The older the learner is, the more ingrained this student self becomes, and for some, it does not include play and being playful. While they likely engage in creative and collaborative play outside of school, asking questions, learning from mistakes, and collaborating with peers are not part of their understanding of what happens in school. Rather, school entails listening to the teacher and trying to learn the right answer. The same could be said of teachers. Some may have a teacher's self that is at odds with trying to build a school-wide culture of playful learning. What if you focused on building a culture of playful learning that would expand your learner's student self to include using play as a strategy for learning? Recall how, in the first picture of practice, debating the natures of facts, fourth graders in Ferdis' class were initially reluctant to engage in conversation and debate. Nova pioneer Armando's principal Gavin Esterheinsen explains that in South Africa, children are generally expected to be quiet, respectful, and not look adults in the eye. So it is not surprising that some students hesitated to participate in conversations where they might even disagree with their teacher. Gavin notes that in South Africa, educators discussing school and classroom culture is unusual. School culture is generally taken as a given. This is true in other countries too. To change culture, Gavin leads conversations that explicitly talk about creating a school culture that promotes playful learning in line with South African values. With attention to culture, Ferdis creates a classroom where controversial statements lead to robust and respectful conversations. How to respond to concerned families and colleagues? Families naturally want their best for their children. In some communities, quality education is the only chance for advancement for young people and their families. In cultures where the idea that play supports learning is foreign, families may question the idea of playful learning as part of their children's education. We have heard from many educators that a major challenge in bringing more playful learning into their schools is family resistance. What if you engage families in conversations about playful learning? There are many ways to structure conversations with families about playful learning. Ask families to think about how they played as children and what they learned from this play, or to identify a person who uses play as a strategy for learning and how that person contributes to the community. Share your school's indicators of playful learning to provide a fuller sense of what playful learning looks like, grounding discussions and documentation of their children's learning playfully. Do not expect one conversation to change minds. However, over time, families will gain a better understanding of how play supports learning. Ultimately, they can be allies in bringing more play and playfulness into your school. The same can be said for colleagues with similar attitudes about play and learning. Again, what if you engage these colleagues in conversations grounded in evidence of what students learn through play? The pictures of practice in this book can serve as such evidence. What to do about limited resources? Some classrooms and schools have access to valuable resources, books, laptops, high-speed internet, an array of art materials and more that support playful explorations and learning. In addition, the relatively small class size in some settings allows for frequent student-teacher interactions. Settings with larger class size and limited resources makes providing students with materials and attention a challenge. What if you used low-cost or free materials? Leaves, sticks, pebbles, and bottle caps can be used for counting, classifying, sorting, and other math activities. Cardboard can be used to create props for traumatic play. Look at an item through the eyes of children and consider how they might use the materials creatively. For example, recycled materials can be used in art projects. Share with your students the work of artists who use recycled materials for inspiration. Natural, repurposed, and recycled materials can also be used for activities to stock students' play kits. See the POP toolbox. These materials may be readily available, and businesses and community members may be happy to provide resources if they know it will support children's learning. And some playful activities, storytelling, singing, and dancing, do not require any materials at all. What if you expanded the walls of your classroom to include the outdoors? The outdoors affords space for students to move and can put them in a playful mindset. Use the outdoors to provide students a new point of view or space for imaginary play. If going outside is not an option, consider what spaces beyond the classroom can be used to inspire playful learning. What if you created a classroom culture that supports your students' playful learning? Here we refer back to the idea of culture. A playful classroom culture is much more about ideas, routines, and mindsets as it is about materials. While it will take practice, the strategies discussed in Chapter 4 can be implemented in any classroom, regardless of the physical resources available. Reflecting on learning with learners is particularly important here for building a classroom culture of learning through play. How to address contrary policies. In Chapter 5, we discussed how curricular demands can make it difficult for playful learning to take root. Relatedly, high-stakes assessment practices can be a barrier to playful learning. While it's not impossible to promote playful learning in contexts with structured curricula and high-stakes tests, remember how in South Africa, Nebafuti and Kabiswana provided playful learning, such policy matters. What if you advocate for more playful learning-friendly policies at your school and beyond? Speaking frankly and persuasively to authority figures, school heads, policymakers, and political leaders take skill and courage. Perhaps at first, rather than becoming the spokesperson for such efforts, you help in creating evidence from your classroom about how playful practices promote essential learning. You are an expert in how your students are learning and have important perspectives to share. What if you did all of the above, tried and reflect, planned, built culture, engaged with families, and advocated with others? What if you asked colleagues, supervisors, families, and students to play with ideas and structures with you? The anthropologist Margaret Mead wrote, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Find your group." More than one way. Throughout this book, we have argued that there is more than one way. More than one way to explain the relationship between play and learning, describe what playful learning looks and feels like, and to create classroom and school cultures that support playful learning. Now we reflect on the idea of more than one way, an idea which, in its simplicity, we find utility. More than one way is a reminder that there are multiple ways to learn, teach, solve problems, explore, communicate, behave, and be a good student, teacher, and member of a school community. It involves flexibility and an openness to surprise. More than one way involves recognizing that not everything in a classroom and school will go according to plan, and everyone, students, teachers, and school leaders, need to adapt and be flexible. Emerging from our research, and in particular conversations with educators, more than one way resonates with other educational ideas, pluralistic theories of intelligence, a commitment to social justice, and adaptations for children with special rights. Recognizing, allowing, planning for, and celebrating more than one way can open up opportunities for playful learning in a variety of circumstances. What does more than one way mean for educators who want to promote playful learning? In thinking about curriculum and learning activities, it's a reminder to ask questions with several or even no definitive answers. It means recognizing that multiple perspectives strengthen solutions to problems, providing multiple ways for students to explore and express ideas. It means that even when there is a correct answer, exploring different pathways to that answer and being able to explain one's thinking in different ways is a strength. Indeed, one characteristic of expertise is the ability to explain something in more than one way. For example, in mathematics, Liz Caffrey, a middle school teacher in the U.S., explains, "There is more than one way to understand math. There's more than one way to solve a problem. And also, there's more than one way to represent ideas. Sometimes there's a better, more efficient way, but it doesn't mean there's one way. Having lots of tools and perspectives on things gives you a more rounded ability to problem solve or tackle more difficult things later in life." Regarding problem solving and creativity, Codman Academy school head Tabiti Brown notes, "If you have more perspectives, you have a better chance of coming up with a solution. Collective action gets stronger outcomes. Indeed, recognizing that there's more than one solution, answer, or approach seems a prerequisite for using play as a strategy for learning." In thinking about student behavior, more than one way is a reminder that educators should allow students to move their bodies in ways that support their learning. Giving learners agency over their bodies opens up possibilities for playful learning. In the classrooms we observed across the four countries, teachers allowed and encouraged children to sit or stand in different ways during whole group discussions, individual work time, and small group conversations. Part of teaching is helping learners discover the physical ways that support them in attending, contributing to, and learning in their classroom community. Educators should embrace more than one way of their own professional development. When something is not working for a student or group of students, a more than one way approach involves teachers asking what if in order to explore alternatives. It means being curious about students and striving to get to know them, their interests, abilities, ways of learning, and funds of knowledge. More than one way can be contrasted to the belief that there is just one way, or one-wayism. One-wayism appears when there is one way to get an answer, solve a math problem, or sit during whole group meetings. In these situations, there's often just one way to teach. Scripted curricular guides have very specific language for teachers to use, with a premium placed on fidelity of implementation. In extreme but not uncommon situations, school leaders expect to walk into separate classrooms of the same grade level and find them on the same page in the curriculum. While one can debate the efficiency of such centralized approaches to learning, one thing is certain: they do not promote playful learning. It is worth briefly probing the roots of one-wayism and the bureaucratic approach to teaching and learning it represents, roots that are related to a misguided attitudes about learning, play, and school. The anthropologist David Graeber noted, "What ultimately lies behind the appeal of bureaucracy is fear of play. The origin of this fear, at least for the well-intentioned bureaucrat, lies in a lack of trust. Lack of trust that school leaders will wisely guide their institutions, lack of trust that teachers have the abilities or the interest to provide powerful learning experiences, lack of trust in students caring enough about learning that they will do so without rewards and punishments. We recognize that play is a complex phenomenon and not without risks. We are not opposed to accountability. And we have confidence in the abilities of groups of people to self-organize, an ability promoted through play. Surveying the educational landscape around the world, we strongly believe that in many, if not most, instances, bureaucratic controls need to be loosened to allow for more than one way." The pictures of practice provide examples of the diversity of teaching and school-wide practices that support playful learning across age groups, cultures, and contact area. Jody, Verdes, Ola, Nemafuti, Carol, Blair, Mauricio, Marina, and their colleagues approach to teaching and learning with curiosity and flexibility, with the idea of more than one way in mind. Of course, there is more than one way to learn about playful learning. While we hope this book and other Pedagogy of Play resources offer inspirations, insight, and specific practices, we encourage you to explore other playful approaches to learning, including the work of the Agora Schools in the Netherlands, Anji Play in China, Care for Education in South Africa, and the Center of Playful Learning in the U.S., Reggio Emilia in Italy, Sesame Workshop, and Vivian Paley, along with schools featured in the Pictures of Practice and other examples in this book. Throughout this book, we have addressed three main issues about playful learning. In chapters 1 and 2, we discussed why it is useful to have a pedagogy of play. In chapter 3, we examined what playful learning looks and feels like. In chapter 4 and 5, we looked at how you can promote playful learning, offering practices and strategies to incorporate into classrooms and the fabric of life at your school. And in the Pictures of Practice, we have provided examples of many ways educators from around the world are supporting their students' playful learning. In this conclusion, we offer thoughts about how to navigate challenges and think about more than one way to introduce or reinforce playful learning in your school. We hope the principles, indicators, and practices, examples, explanations, and tools in this book help you and your colleagues find your way in helping your children lead learning, explore the unknown, and find joy in learning.
A Pedagogy of Play was written by Ben Mardell, Jen Ryan, Mark Krzyzewski, Megina Baker, Savannah Schultz, and Yvonne Louis-Constant. The book was published by Project Zero at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Sound design, production, and editing by Kirsi Tilk. In the show notes for each of our episodes, you can find references and further information, including a link to access a free PDF, or to the Lulu website to purchase a physical copy of the book. Visit savannahschultz.com/podcast to find them.